Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Morelia Python Radio 2014, brought to you by MoreliaPythons.com, the Morelia Python Forum. Go check it out. What's going on, Owen? How are you tonight on this wonderful Tuesday evening?
Tuesday evening. I am doing well. It's given us a little bit another week to get back into the swing of radio every Tuesday, but here we are. So
that's right. yeah, I know, right? But tonight we have Troy from Kodam Carpets, all the way, another Australian guest.
Holy crap!
It's 2 weeks in a row of Australian carpet python or python breeders. So I know he had to relocate to get a better signal, so he'll be calling in about 15 minutes or so. But that gives us plenty of time to talk about some stuff that's going on. How's your breeding
shit,
season?
You will.
Yeah, right.
The breeding season is dicey, dude. A lot of question marks this year.
Really?
All my girls.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. Girls that would have shown me perfect signs are kind of acting like they're not. And other girls who, you know, were rather difficult or the ones who are locking up. So looking like we got super caramel jags coming. So Venus is coming through for me again. But on some of the other coastals, it's just they're maybes. They kind of feel like it, but they're not blowing up. So we're not exactly sure. And but then, of course, we have the other pythons, too. They're kind of throwing me for loops, the white lips and the max. And we had a little bit of a tangle where our large gold-faced female white lip decided that she has had enough with the male and beat the crap out of him. So he's recuperating with some pretty nice-sized bite wounds and a nice gash underneath his chin, courtesy of the female. So, they were together for 2 months now, and she just now finally decided that she had had enough of him. So,
wow. That's
yeah, these are Python breeding problems. I call Chris and I go, you know, mine don't kill each other. And he's like, oops. So, you know, he's okay, but yeah, never had that happen before. So,
wow. That throws you for a loop, huh? Jeez.
Yeah, wasn't expecting that. It was and you weren't even looking for it. The black phases have been kind of our one pair of black phase white lips decided they weren't getting along, and that was they left a few scratches on each other, and that's enough. They've not seen each other since. But the gold phase have been getting along for ever, and they even locked up once. So part of me is like, is she gravid and just decided she doesn't want the boy around? I don't know.
Hmm. So what are you mentioned a minute ago that there's the telltale signs of what you're looking for in your females for people that are just breeding pythons for their first year. What would that be? What is the telltale sign that tells you that you're on the right road?
Now, if you're breeding it your first year, there is no sign because you're going to be staring at it and you're going to be like, for the entire time. You're going to be like, is it working? Is it doing? I have no idea. So there very rarely is a telltale sign until she starts basking belly up. Then you got it. That's your sign. There it is. And sometimes they don't even do that.
Yeah, my girls didn't do that at all.
Exactly. So, but when you start getting into it, when it's your second year, your third year, your fourth year with the same girls, you know what makes them, you know what is their normal behavior and what is off. Right now, Venus is sitting cockeyed. She doesn't like laying down on her stomach as much, so she kind of tilts it to the side a little bit. Not a full basking belly up, but just a little tilt to the side. And that is enough to show me that Venus is gravid.
Okay.
So Aurora used to do the same thing. Trinity right now is cramming herself into her water dish, which is something that, Trinity does when she's gravid. So that's something I might look at with that. I had one snake, her name was Lyra, and she stayed on top of her branch in her cage all the time. She'd eat off the branch, she'd take craps off the branch, she'd drink dangling down the branch, never left the damn branch. When she was gravid, she couldn't get the weight the right way, so she was felt uncomfortable, so she came off the branch. So all of a sudden, the snake that does this thing for every day of the year is now doing something different. That's your sign. So every time I saw Lyra off the branch, she's gravid. So, and what'd you know? She laid the eggs. I took the eggs, and she went back up on the branch. So, yeah, I imagine this is what condor breeders do. So, it came off the branch. Holy shit! So, it's one of those things. So, it's you're looking for small changes. My Macklot female has been receptive and letting me touch her without, freaking out. I don't know. Maybe. We'll see. Normally she's a horrid bitch. So, maybe that's the thing. So, also, some of my females do not like having their stomachs touched. If your female is totally cool with you handling her all year, and then you're trying to breed and you touch her stomach and she whips right back around and looks at you kind of like pissed or even makes a noise. That's a pretty good sign in my opinion. So don't touch that. So.
Right.
Yeah. Huh. Like every other pregnant woman, you don't touch the belly.
Are you noticing, feeling for follicles? Do you do anything as far as that goes?
I try so hard, but I can't. I think is I am breeding smaller females than I normally do. Just because there's some, the larger females are when I first started with carpet pythons and it was all, feed it and then it gets big and females don't breed until they're 7 feet or something like that. So I've learned that you don't need to do that. So the next couple batches of females are actually smaller than the other ones. So it's getting a little easier to start the feeling for follicles. But when it comes to the big girls, like Venus, I can't feel anything. It's just freaking solid. When it comes to Carmen, I can kind of feel some follicles going on in there, but I'm not exactly sure. It's a pretty big toss-up. So I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, I don't know. Yeah, it's kind of a weird season for me off to, off to the races. I've seen a lot of lockups, but only with particular females. So, I mean, my IJs, they're pretty much golden. The only thing I did do is I had a smaller male, my male Graham. And I changed him out. I used Mersault because – I know he's a proven breeder, and actually, I don't know. I wasn't seeing a lot of action with him, and I didn't see. They lay together, but I didn't witness any locks. As soon as I put him in with Poison Ivy, immediately lock up. So I just kind of used him. I'm not really having much luck with the smaller males when it comes to IJ. So I don't know.
I'm actually doing the opposite because my granite male is larger than my jaghead granite, and I hadn't seen anything with them, but the jaghead granite is the one that I tossed in, and he locked with the female. Of course, then the female got out of her cage and got out of the room and into, like, 20-degree weather, so I have no idea what's going on with that clutch. She may have, killed them. So I'm hoping that I got her into the warm in time.
Right.
And I didn't. There wasn't any harm done to the eggs, but I don't know. I haven't seen them lock since then. I saw a couple locks, but then I haven't seen anything since. And then actually the zebra jag got tagged out because he wasn't doing anything with my jungle female, and I swapped him out for my Mike Bell jungle male, my proven breeder from Mo.
Mm-hmm.
Threw him in there, and they locked up immediately. So, you know, the zebra jack got the tag out. So, and he's a proven breeder too. So I don't know. Maybe we'll see what's up with that. I'll have to figure it out. But it's an interesting season.
Yeah, so I got the two IJ clutches. I got I didn't see a whole lot of anything with the coastals, but I just kind of left them together and let them do their thing, and hopefully, I get at least one coastal clutch because I got some cool stuff there. But the main heavy hitters of what I was really shooting for this year, I've seen a lot of lockups. So I got the albino jag in with the zebra head albino. I saw a lot of locks there. Also rotated him to caramel head albino. Saw a lot of locks there. And then the albino and the exanic, a lot of lockups. Albino and the tiger, a lot of lockups. I had the caramel zebra with the super caramel zebra jag, and then I didn't see a whole lot of, anything. So I put the caramel zebra in there. So it's caramel zebra to caramel zebra. And, I saw instantaneous lockups. So that's the new pairing of what it's going to be. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. We'll see. Should be an interesting season. I just want to hatch out an albino, man. I think that would be badass.
That would be nice.
And I'm very curious to see what happens with Poison Ivy. That's another one of my hopeful pairings for this year. So if I get those two, I'll be good to go. Have you seen what's going on in the laws that's happening around? Myrtle Beach, they pretty much banned reptiles. There was a reptile show there. Done. Yep, that's done. I don't know if they're trying to repeal that or change that, or I haven't heard any updates on that. And then New York. It's always been illegal to own, I guess, the big constrictors, retics, berms, and scrub pythons. But now they've made it a felony if you're caught with them. So that's kind of crazy.
That is really crazy.
I don't know. Seems like the...
So basically all those people who have them that are now going to try to get rid of them, what are they going to do?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I don't know. I mean, I guess that you should follow the laws that are in where you're at, and if you don't like the laws,
right,
I guess move. You know, I mean, that would be my recommendation. Don't break laws, because then you ruin it for everybody. But
yeah, remind me never to leave this state.
I don't know, man. It seems like that's ringing true the more I think about it, because seems like Pennsylvania is pretty, I don't know if conservative would be the word or, you know, when it comes to that kind of stuff, but it doesn't seem, I know there's been a couple times where there's been some close calls, but it seems for the most part they always get squashed out. So I don't know.
Right.
And I know Florida is another place, but it seems like if you have your permits and whatnot, you're pretty much good to go. So I don't know.
Well, I've been reading that apparently some of the new laws that are going to pass in Ohio is that any constrictor over 9 feet must have a permit. So I think we fit just below that because I guess they didn't do the research on coastals or diamonds. So, okay, that's fine. But anything else over 9 feet must have a permit.
Is there really any, like, 9-foot carpets? Well, except for, you know.
Well,
I'm
glad they didn't finally, like, you know, normally it goes the other way where it's like, it has the potential ban it. So I'm kind of glad they didn't go that route.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of, you know, it's pretty, make sure you're paying attention to that kind of stuff so that, you know, next thing you know, it's not, you know, but even with that, I mean, the Myrtle Beach thing seems like it happened overnight. It's like, here it is, and then there it goes.
I'm completely surprised because I was expecting more of I didn't get any notifications about, I mean, I didn't read anything. It didn't look like there was any kind of a surge to stop it. It just kind of blew right through. And I'm surprised because the Myrtle Beach show was, I heard, a pretty big one and one that's been going on for a while. So how the whole Myrtle Beach show could just get obliterated like that.
Yeah, I don't know. But there you go. It's real important, too. I don't know how U.S. ARC is involved in that. I know that they have a lot on their plate with the whole Lacey Act thing, lawsuit that they're going through. So, you know, I don't know if they – I'm sure that they're going to do their best to do to help with everything they can, but they need our help. So I would just put it out there to make sure that you donate what you can. I mean, if somebody donated $1 a month, you know, just our followers, you're looking at, you know, that's a big chunk of change just a buck, you know. I mean, come on, man. That's nothing. If your hobby isn't worth a buck, then I don't know. Maybe you shouldn't be in it, you know. So
yeah.
I really like the one of the things that I'm going to try to do is I almost look at it like I don't want to say it's a tax per se, and it really won't affect my customer at all, but certain percentage of everything that I sell, I usually do like 5% of anything that I sell, I donate that to US ARC. So that's what I do. So,
yeah, so I mean, also have the auction.
Yep.
At Carpet Fest.
That's going
to
be.
If you don't want to donate to US ARC for the entire year, come to Carpet Fest and buy a $100 coastal for a ridiculous amount of money and be happy.
Well, you could do that.
That was my pitch. You're quite welcome all.
Yeah. The other thing, I don't know if you saw it, but I sent you the message earlier and you said some kind of comment about
talk about it.
Imbricata Jag, did you see it? What did you think? What were your thoughts?
I burned.
Did you think it was worth it? Would it be something that you would do? Or
well,
no?
Now we need to. First of all, we need to see how the thing's going to color up. It's still pretty young, and you know it's where is it? Where was it born? It was born in Australia, correct?
No, it was born in Germany.
Ah! All right. Well. Now, you know,
I don't know if
my
they are
thing
in
is,
Australia.
They could be in Australia, but my thing is like, all right, Germany, I assume there's more imbricata over there than there are here, which I don't even know if there are any here.
Right.
So I guess it's all right. Now, can you imagine if it was like one of the only imbricata pair in the country and like it wasn't being bred to another imbricata? Like, I'd lose my damn mind because it's like, what are you doing? Like, now I can understand if you do the imbricata male and you bred it to an imbricata female and then a coastal jag and whatever the hell you wanted, that's cool. But make sure you make more of the thing that's not here. So,
I can see what you mean with that. But I think the one that I don't have the person's name in front of me, but
yeah,
it was a male imbricata. Now that could be that maybe there's only a male around.
Or
that
the male's ready and the female's growing up. You know, I can understand if you have a male imbricata and your female's a year or two away, you give him a shot. This way he's ready to go when the female is. You know, it makes sense that way. So I can't fault the guy for doing it. But would I do it? Probably not. I mean, that's not my thing.
I guess at that point you're looking at hybrid territory because...
Right. Right,
yeah, that's
thin line.
Species. Yeah, that's the line you don't cross. Don't cross.
That's
the line
you do not cross. I'm waiting for the day when we see a rough scale jag and I can just flip out on air. burn in hell. It's one of those things. I can't fault the guy for it. I am going to be interested to see what happens when it colors up. Is it going to be as drastic as I think maybe like an inland jag would be, or you know something else? No, I don't think so. We've seen so many variations of jag right now. Could this thing really set itself apart from everything that jag has done?
I mean, man, this is one of those things that. You know, I don't really fault people for doing it. You do what you want to do, I guess. But I don't know. I mean, the snake is cool looking. It's over on Morelia Pick of the Week. But it's really cool looking. But I'm with you, man. I don't know if I would do that. I think that's where my line in the sand is. I don't know. I don't know if it would be worth it. You know, I guess it's some kind of crazy thing, but then Carpandros are crazy looking, and that's not my thing either, so I don't know why I would do it with carpets.
My question is that we've seen the imbricata jag. What do the sieves look like?
Who knows?
What do the 50-50s look like? I mean, are we looking at something that can be differentiated from a coastal, or is it going to look so much like it probably just looks like a carpet python. I mean, it's not like you can really tell. I mean, there's some carpet pythons that are out there hard to tell now, which I appreciate the facts now that, you know, whenever somebody shows up on a forum or a Facebook page and they're like, can you identify my carpet python? The usual thing everybody says is, it's a carpet python. Congratulations. I mean, it's like no one's trying to take guesses anymore. No one's trying to make the person who bought this carpet python on a dealer's table really feel any better by going like, oh, it's a pure jungle. You did a great job. They're all like, well, you don't know. You'll never know. And don't you dare tell anybody it's pure. So.
Right.
Which is the correct answer.
You know, I had a glimpse. You know, I'm the first one to I don't even know if I really want to talk about it. Well, I guess it is. But let's just go down the road. I'm the first one to defend, like, the whole morph game with ball pythons and all that kind of stuff and, you know, why people are into it and they can be excited about a ball python morph and whatnot. But I saw something over on the Bush League Breeders Club that kind of, to be honest with you, it kind of disappointed me. It kind of...
Major Twitch.
It kind of disheartened me a bit. They were talking about, to be honest with you, it was about the GHI morph, and who really cares? I'm not going into details about what morphs it were or wasn't. But just the you know, what the sad part is that you got these people that are like high, you know, I mean, they're the I guess rock stars is the word. I don't know if you even want to, you know, equate it with that.
The
but
top guys, yeah.
I mean, they're arguing about such bullshit, and these new people that, you know, they're picking up a ball python for the first time, and they're listening to these people that they kind of look up to, and they're arguing about it. And, you know, I kind of looked at it through the eyes of never once, not one time did they talk about, they didn't bring up the word species or, like, you know, I mean, at least with us Morelia nuts, you know, we can be just as passionate, but we're passionate about ideas of how to breed the snake or how to keep the snake, or, you know, I mean, morphs do play a part in it to some extent, but not nearly as much as what I saw there. And it was just kind of disheartening, because I kept seeing new people chime in, and they're like, wow, I mean, they're kind of like taking a step back and saying, good Lord, if this is what this is like, I think I don't want to be involved in this bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah. I don't know. I don't see carpet pythons ever going that road. I think there's, I don't know. I've noticed a resurgence in people just wanting to, like, it seems to me, I don't know, maybe it's just who I follow or who's on my feed of Facebook or whatever, but it seems to me like coastals, people are interested in just normal coastals, you know what I mean?
It seems like, as good of a morph gets, normals still always have their place. A really pretty normal whatever will never die. Just how long as, like, you know, there's something I keep saying is everybody loves a tiger. I have not found a single person who does not love a tiger. A good striped tiger, people are like, ooh. I don't care if you keep tigers. I don't care if you're an IJ guy, a jungle guy. Tiger coastal, nicely striped, colored tiger. Everybody kind of takes a look at it. So, and I say that to Balin all the time. I'm like, well, everybody loves a tiger, so.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, I just, you know, I think about that, and I think about it's like one of the, I just hear Pete that, like, the way they talk about it, they were just kind of, and this could be just these few individuals or just a couple of the individuals. You know, I kind of saw them in a different light, and when I looked at them a different way, because, you know, when I heard them on Reptile Radio and them talking about it, I thought that they were passionate about the species that they were working with, and they just, you know, were into the color and, you know, they like the genetics part of it, and yada, yada, yada. But, you know, it seems to me, they didn't bring any
of fun. Yeah,
absolutely.
They didn't bring any of that in there. You know, I would love to go to my high school genetics teacher and be like, my God, I've used pun and squares so often. I'm sorry, I doubted you when you said I might eat this. So, you know.
Son of a bitch.
But, son of a bitch, he was right. But, you know, and the genetic part is fun. And I love, you know, the part that I absolutely love is, you know, I raised two carpet pythons from hatchlings and was able to see them progress from tiny little disgusting gray things to the beautiful adults that they became. And I got to breed them together and then see the fruits of that labor in a python that is in the babies. You got to see everything, which has got all these babies had the best and worst of your two originals mixed together. And that it's just cake for me. I love that. I love when babies are hatching, because it's like you get to see those things that you've raised all over again, but in a new light. So,
right.
Yeah, that part I'll always love.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, I don't know. I think that just is you have to have a balance, you know? You just have to have a balance.
You do.
You cannot
be one or the other and be happy in this industry or in this hobby or even with your own collection. You notice the people who are all kind of gung-ho about morphs, there's turnover quickly. And they may have one snake that they really like that's really just more of a pet that they've kept forever, and it's usually a normal. I mean, right. The morphs are usually the ones that are in and out the door. The normal's like, oh, that was my first ball python. He's hanging around. I can't get rid of him. You know, it's the fact that you're able to make those decisions. And you know, the people who are in it just to be the rare or do the interesting, it's fine. But, you know, you have to find those special people that also share the same kind of passion that you do. Otherwise, you're just kind of sitting there. So,
yeah.
Which,
yeah.
Have you noticed the sheer number of different species of python that have been kind of going through the classifieds in the past month or two?
No, I haven't. What do you mean?
It's ridiculous. I've seen everything from I've seen water pythons, I've seen white lips, I've seen rings, I've seen tons of stuff start going through. Right now, if you go on Kingspick or Fauna, you're going to see a ton of Woma and a ton of Savu, which is amazing because it's like now in about another month or two, you're not going to see either. They're going to be just gone. And you're not going to see another freaking Savu ad for like a year and a half. It's
right.
Just, and I think that's just crazy, is that it's these waves of animals that come in and out. So it's just kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know. I more and more that the more and more I know that I feel that carpets are kind of my thing, and I kind of like what you said earlier. It's kind of like I'm doing some research and like, you know, lines and the different bloodlines and such, and it's a shame that some of this stuff was here and now it's kind of just kind of disappeared.
Not,
you know, I bring up jungles. I mean, there used to be, you know, all lines in the U.S. Like VPI. I didn't know that, you know, that's a line, but that was kind of like a bunch of different bloodlines that were kind of just put together, you know.
Just mixed
with the
yellow color.
Well, you know, just different, that this is what was available. But, you know, bloodlines and lines, I was kind of doing research on that and trying to get my head around the difference between the two and, you know, how bloodline is basically two wild-caught animals bred together, and that creates a bloodline.
Right.
But it's not the same thing as, like, I guess an example would be, you know, like we think of M. Penn Coastals. Well, M. Penn would be the line, you know, because he bred them for striping and color, whereas Lemke would be the bloodline, you know what I mean?
Because they were wild-caught things.
Coastal carpets.
Right.
I'm not sure if there was ever really southern carpets, southern coastals in the States, but I think about that, and I think the difference between the north and the south, and usually the heads on the northern ones are the southern ones are like, I don't know, you see an adult with that just that impressive head, it just kind of like I just see it and say, God damn, that's cool shit, you know.
Yeah.
I think about if it was here and now it's gone, you know. And it's just kind of a shame that, like, you know, we're just talking about Imbricata, and as cool as the, you know, I'm not going to lie, it looks cool. But I'm kind of with you. It's like establish the line of the natural occurring carpet python before it starts getting mixed up with, you know, zebra and this and that and everything else. So,
well,
you know what I mean?
It's almost funny. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, Nick will be the first one to tell you that there are certain pythons that were here and were a dime a freaking dozen, but because they didn't come out with any morphs or weren't that popular, they're no longer found in the United States. I think he's been searching for this one type of, water python or something that was here. Nobody bred it. There were, like, one pair or one group that was breeding. They were sold off. They died, and now he has to, like, get them imported from southern UK in order to get them back. And
that
I think is somewhat ridiculous. I mean, could you imagine if, say they stopped bringing in let's say they stop bringing in Halma Harris scrubs, and then everybody who's working with Halma Harris couldn't figure out how to breed them, and they all died. And then finally somebody had luck in the UK, but because no one really worked with it, no one really tried to figure it out, no one really thought it out because, hey, they're still being imported. Why do we need to really take the time to breed it? We'd be out of scrubs. We'd be out of Halma Harris.
Right.
That just popped into my head.
That would be a bad thing. But I don't know. I dig all kinds of carpets. I like them all. I like the mixes, the crosses, the everything. I hope those things don't get, again, it goes back to balance, you know. Carpets are cool, man. They're cool. They're a cool species. You know, and the other thing, Troy's on the line, so we're going to click him on in a minute. But the other thing I just wanted to say is, like, you know, not everybody has to be a breeder, man. You know?
No, you don't.
It just seems like you, I don't know, it might be our fault, but we kind of like just everybody has to, you know, if you get this expensive carpet, you know, you have to breed it, you know? You just can't buy a cool carpet python and put it in a cage and admire it for its beauty and a naturalistic setup and say, God damn, that's cool as shit. I think about that, like, with any other pets, like dogs, cats, you know, you buy that, you're not buying them to breed, you know?
You're actually told not to breed it because there's many out there that need homes, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it has its place. Don't get me wrong. I'm not because it is an exciting thing, but, you know, I want to put that out there that you don't have to do it, man. If you just want to keep a snake because you want to keep a snake, we were joking, and one of the things I said was if you had luck with Maclot's pythons this year, I was going to buy one and just keep as a pet. You know, no intentions of breeding it, but I was going
to
name it Myth. Maternal incubation failure.
I'm going to have to give it to you at that point.
Its name is going to be Myth.
Yeah, I love it.
Maternal incubation failure. They're going to say, what the hell does Myth stand for? Why'd you call it Myth? You know, but hell, man, they're cool. They're a cool python, you know, and it would be cool just to have one as a pet, you know. So, anyway, we got Troy on the line there. I believe that's him, and we'll click him on, and we'll get it going. We'll talk, see what he's got going on down Australia. Let's see if I can click him on. Hey, Troy, is that you?
That's me, buddy. How you doing?
Good.
Nice.
How are you? Welcome
I'm
to the
doing
show.
Good. Sorry. Oh, thank you for having me on. Sorry for being late. It took me about 2 minutes, half hour, to drive into civilization. So, in here on the phone. So, all right, let's get going.
Okay.
I absolutely love that idea. So, let's get started, Troy. Tell us, what got you into reptiles?
What got me into reptiles? That must have been about 18, 20 years ago, I'd say, when my place is full of venomous snakes. And I was planning out one of the paddocks one day. And as I was going along, this red-bellied black snake just would not move from in front of the tractor. And I actually jumped off the tractor and caught this animal to get it out the road. And while I was playing with this red-bellied black, something clicked inside. And I thought, man, these reptiles are cool. I've got to be.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
I think we lost it, Troy.
Troy?
Oh, there he is.
Okay.
You're kind of going in
and out,
Troy.
You're fading in and out.
Oh, he's going to call in again.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he got disconnected there.
So was
but,
he saying that he was playing with a red-bellied black snake?
Yes.
You have any idea how venomous those things are?
Oh, that's awesome.
What the hell? I mean, that'd be like you going, oh, I got into snakes because one day I was walking and I poked a timber rattler in the head.
Oh, man. That's crazy. So, yeah, hopefully we can get him back on there. And let's see. I'm trying to see if he... If he's no, don't got him. I guess we'll give it a couple minutes and see. See what happens. I'll just keep an eye out.
But that is crazy that they would start with handling venomous. I mean, I can't say for myself venomous scare the crap out of me. But I mean, like you, your father had venomous when you were a kid. Didn't you ever think that like at any moment I'm about to die?
I don't know, man. They're intimidating, no doubt. You know, it's almost like I don't know when you're looking into the eyes of a venomous animal. It's kind of like you kind of feel like they know that they can kill you. You know, I don't know. It's like muck with me, and you're
at any moment,
trouble.
I'm done. It's that always was what was weird to me is that, you know, when you look in their eyes as well as the eyes of, like, big crocs, it's he's not just staring back at you. He's sizing you up, and he's knowing what to do if you open the door. So.
Okay. Let's give this a whirl again. Let's see if we can get Troy in here. Hey, Troy. It was getting choppy there, and then it's kind of dropped off, so hopefully we get a better connection.
Yeah, sorry guys, I've moved. Is it a little better?
A
little bit.
Let's see how.
A little
yeah,
bit, not too much.
Yeah, it's kind of breaking up. Let's see. I don't know if there's anything.
A little choppy.
There you go.
All right.
Sorry guys, I'm trying to move around. Myself and my brother, we live out of town. We have very, very bad reception.
Okay.
That's all right. We kind of got to understand you are calling from the other side of the planet. So, you know.
The cool
there's
side.
There's not a lot of towers between here and there. So, one of those
wherever
things.
You,
so,
wherever you are right now, it's perfect.
Don't move. Well, all right, Troy, you were telling us that you were messing around with a red-belly black snake, which, for those people who don't know, is a very venomous snake. So that just kind of playing with him just kind of clicked?
Over here, we actually call them the gentleman's elapid for the simple reason you really have to stick a red belly up to get one to bite you. They really are quite a placid snake. Even though they're venomous, they're still very placid. But that just handling my first reptile, being a red belly, something clicked inside, and I really wanted to get into keeping snakes. And my brother went out first. He got a carpet python. I was behind him when I got my first carpet python. And then away from there, we just kept the collection growing, and we started playing around with a few different animals. And then finally, after 5-6 years of having a fairly big collection with a bit of everything in it, we found some animals that really clicked for us. And that in the animals that we actually specialize in these days.
Awesome. So, what are you currently working with?
Myself, I love carpet pythons. I love the genetics in the carpet pythons, and I blame that one on one of your fellow Americans, actually, a Dr. Justin Gelander. I was lucky enough to go to a symposium up in Cairns to listen to Justin talk about the mutations within the carpet pythons. And after listening to Justin's talk, after seeing some of the photos, I come away from Cairns absolutely hooked on carpet mutations. And I went straight out. The first, after listening to that talk, which was, I think it was about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, something like that, I went out and I bought, I think, 3 or 4 Jags.
Wow.
And since Jaguar Pythons, but since then, I think the collection now is 140, 160 odd Jaguars, a couple of zebras, a couple of zebra Jags. I've been albino Darwins, your albino, then we got some albino carpets as well, and some hit for albino Murray Jags going, and we're just really breaking it up and getting into a heap of stuff these days. And olive pythons, I love working with the albino olive pythons as well.
Now you're talking my language. You got olive in there. Nice.
Yeah. Oh, mate. Love the olives. Love the albino olives. They just seem to be a little bit harder to crack a good clutch of albino olives. So that's always exciting when you can crack that. And then over my brother's way, it's just full of black-headed pythons. And we're starting to make a bit of a move into green tree pythons now as well, which is pretty cool.
Nice.
Cool. Nice.
All right,
cool. So,
it all started from listening to Justin's talk on the mutations within the carpet pythons.
Excellent. So would you do you just do the snakes, or do you branch out into other reptiles? You know, you are in Australia. I assume walking around you can just grab a goanna or something.
I tried with a few bearded dragons. I tried with a few central netted dragons. I couldn't find the passion there that I have with us. And I was like, well, if the passion just isn't there, if I don't get as excited as I do when I'm looking at the carpets or with the olives, then I thought I'd never really do too well with them. So I kept, I kept a couple as pets for 12 months, 18 months. After that, it was like, man, you guys take so much work compared to snakes, it's rare. So I got rid of everything that had legs and just kept snakes.
I'm with
awesome.
You there.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. I tried a bunch of different things, but, I don't know. Carpet pythons just kind of do it for me, so I feel you there. Are you a species guy, or are you, I mean, are you just a morph guy, or are you into the different species as well? Or subspecies,
no, I just straight out morph guys these days. Absolutely just love tweaking the genetics, love playing with the genetics, the fact that Australia is starting to catch up now with multi-gene animals, which is which I think is pretty cool. We're starting to get axanthic jaguars out. Zebras, zebra jags, het for albino, your caramel zebs, we're really starting to catch up with some of the multi-gene animals, and to me that's getting pretty exciting over this way. Not only have we got a huge gene pool to tap into, but now we've also got all these mutations kicking around as well. We're about to make some pretty cool stuff over this way, I believe, in the coming years.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just having the gene pool, you're going to be surpassing us in no time soon.
He's open for many years. I've been sitting down looking on the computer at all these pretty animals that you guys are producing and that, people over in Europe are producing, and then everything, listening to Justin's talk and then these mutations popping up here in Australia, it was just something just all lined up, and it was like, hell yeah, this is it for me for the rest of my life. I'm just going to be, I'm just going to work with mutations within the carpet pythons. This is going to be
awesome.
Heck yeah. Now, as far as one of the things that we often talk about here in the States is that, you know, I always say that, you know, like with ball pythons, there's a lot of these dinker projects to where, and what I mean by that is, it's like a ball python guy will get, you know, wild caught stock, and they'll look at this little something that's on a ball python, you know, like a scale's out of place, and next thing you know, they breed it, and it turns into this crazy morph, and they're like, you know, oh my God, look at this, it's crazy, you know. Do you guys do that down there with carpets? I mean, are you able to, like, look at the different variety and say, pick it out? And
yeah, Australian keep is a stunning day to catch up to that. Looking at every animal that's produced and look on the animal for what, you know, that animal might then produce. So that's where we're pretty cool. Over the past, you know, 10 years, it's just been breeding for numbers. Now it's actually breeding and for the animal that might produce something really cool. And I know, like my way, I think last year I kept back 8-9 different animals from the breeding season. You're different. So every single one of them had a marker there. The year before, I think we kept back 4 or 5. So within the coming years, we should start seeing some results from those sort of animals that are being kept back. The cool thing is that not just myself kicking around Australia are also going through looking at every single animal they produce, trying to identify different little markers, you know, within that animal. And the cool thing is a lot of it's open communication, a lot of stuff and secrets from one another. We're actually able to work in together. I work in with a few of the other big breeders. Like I produce an animal that might have a different sort of a mark to it, I'll send a photo out to a couple of my mates and I might get a message back saying, hey, look, I produced an animal very similar this year, you know, it's all the same sort of colour. What are your thoughts on, you know, we get these animals together and pair them up and see what happens. So there's a lot of share breeding going on to help speed projects up, which I think is very cool. I think we're still in the very early stages here in Australia of what can be produced.
I'm hoping you guys find a piebald carpet. That would be like, you know, to me that would be just awesome. You know, I'm just waiting for it. One day to click on, you know, one of the Australian Facebook pages, and there it is, you know.
Yeah, wow. That would be cool.
Yeah. I have dreams about stuff like that.
That would be that I think would be the next big morph or step.
Yeah.
That would result in the combinations being thereafter pie jags, pied everything else, and that would be the next big thing, in my opinion, so we'd have to see how that goes.
Yeah, well,
so find it already.
The big one? Sorry?
So find it already. Go looking. Hurry up. We'll wait.
I'm trying. the big one for us at the moment would be the anery. We came across an animal last year that we specs was a anery carpet. And so in 2013, we paired that animal with a hypo bred light for the first step to try to prove out that it is an anery carpet. So if that animal proves out for us, you know, that should be pretty cool. That should open up a few extra doors, hopefully.
Wow.
We've got our first lot of axanthics coming in from a well-known breeder here in Australia.
Wing!
Yeah, he was on the show.
You know him.
Yep. Yeah, he's well respected over this way. One of my idols, one of the blokes I love chatting to, and you know, paying for information. We're actually getting some axanthic carpets in from him this year, but they already have like a possible anery line kicking around as well to help, you know, start off a few other projects. I think that's pretty cool for what's happening our way.
Now, is that a what subspecies is that from? Is that a jungle? Is that the, or I mean the anery?
No,
anery.
It's a pure coastal. It's a pure coastal that we come across. And now the aneries, I really didn't know too much about aneries until we come across this animal and really started researching them. And you know, from what I found, the basic main of the anery compared to the axanthic is the axanthic will strip the red and reduce the yellow, where the anery will strip the red and reduce the yellow. And this thing was in a, this anery that we come across is in a pure coastal carpet form. And we thought, well, rightio, what's the reddest animal that we've got? And we thought, oh, well, that hypo brittle, she's looking awesome. She's ready to breed. Let's start. And she was she was the last girl that laid eggs for us this year too. She was the one that kept us waiting the longest.
Right.
We actually got a full fertile clutch of 22 eggs out of her. So we're very happy with that. We're in the incubator, cooking away
cool.
as we speak. So it's it's the start of something new, hopefully.
Wow. That's exciting. What about No, go ahead.
Oh, the other exciting animal for us would be the parrot. I love the fact that the paradox carpets are like an unknown mutation where we can't reduce that mutation. We've from the albino form. We've got another one that we actually suspect is a paradox, but it's in a jungle form, believe
weird.
It or not. It's big time weird. I actually found this animal in Australia for sale for $200, and I could not transfer the money across to this bloke quick enough. I got the animal. I took a photo. I threw a photo out to a couple of well-known people, like here in Australia, in Europe, in America, with one word, not thought question mark. And most responses that I got back was parrot question mark. So I'm thinking, rightio, well that could be something cool as well. Definitely have a paradox in an albino form. It's got black all over it. But this
right.
jungle that we picked up, this bloke did not want it. It had too much black smudging all over it. No, he had a nice, bright, yellow jungle. He needed another $200 to go and buy another one. So, I was more than happy to put up with $100 for that one. So that animal will actually be going in the breeding program this year. So looking forward to see what happens with those.
Nice.
Wow.
And I think another person that's been on your show before, Damien Hyde.
Yes.
He actually done well this year and managed to crack it off a paradox as well. He actually managed to breed, I think he bred one, might have been two this year. So he's actually done very well there as well.
Yeah, he sent me a couple pictures of some stuff that he had this season hatch out, and it was some pretty interesting stuff.
Oh, yeah, he's got some cool stuff happening as well. For him to go through and crack out a paradox, it was like, good on you, buddy. Let's do some work together.
Yeah. I mean, if it's not genetic and you can't reproduce it, it's still a cool-looking animal. So, I mean, you can get it if you hit it, but it's not something that you could produce like a jag. Even if it's not, it's still – I would like to have one.
Well, I think it's what I like about them so much, the fact that you don't know. No one really knows how to reproduce them. And it's like, all right, well, these things – and there's that many of them popping up. In Australia, I believe that there has to be something there. There's too many of these things popping up for there not to be something. So
right.
every year, more and more of these animals are popping up. So they're going to be a cool animal book.
Wow. That's cool. That's exciting stuff. So what other cool carpet projects do you have going? I know you, I know you have you did some work with Hypo Brettle Jags, and you got some cool stuff videos that you put up.
Yeah, yeah, they are they're one of my favorites. Them and the Murray Jags. I think there is so much work that can be done with just those two. But this year the Hypo Brettle Jags, we've been producing them for a couple of years. And the cool thing is some of the animals that we first started producing are actually now up and producing animals themselves. So this year we've actually done a few crosses where we weren't sure, you know, how these animals were going to turn out. They were going to hit big, or B, they were just going to be an absolute disaster, and, you know, the kids were going to end up with a couple extra pet pythons to play with. I think we've done well. I think we've hit the silver. We crossed one of our Hypo Red Light Jags over one of our Hypo Coastal High Yellow Diamond Cross females. Some of those are really starting to show some nice potential. I believe they're going to end up. We've also crossed them with we've done a cross with a gelatin this year. They're some of my favourites. Hypo Bread Lie Gelatin Jags. They're a very, very maroon and white looking, a very maroon and white looking animal. So hoping for some pretty cool animals out of that lot. What else? We also crossed some Hypo Brettle over over at Darwin. Just curious, trying to bring some more orange out into the animal, and some of the ones in the hypo form are actually quite nice. They're a maroon on a caramel sort of battery, and they are quite nice. The ones that aren't in the hypo form, I'm thinking, are a bit of a miss. They're more of a maroon and a brown colour hatchy, but in hypo form, it's maroon and cream, and it's quite a sexy looking animal. I don't know, man. There's a few on the line that we're working with, and yeah, they're showing plenty of potential for greatness. I believe there's still plenty of work that we'll be doing with that line as well.
Cool.
Then with a couple of other crosses that we've done. One of my favourite animals at home is a caramel. It's a caramel hypo Bradley Jag, and it made Snakebite's TV 2 weeks ago. I think it was when Brian was in Australia doing the Scales and Tails Festival he was covering that one. That caramel hypo Bradley Jag that I was just talking about actually made onto there, and it's a very, I mean, it looks like a worm or python with a carpet head on it.
Weird.
It's an awesome animal. It's one of my favorites.
Wow.
So that's cool. She'll be in the breeding program this year. What we're going to do with her yet, we were planning on crossing an albino over her. But we just got out our first lot of sunglows this year, so I'm actually keen to raise them out for another 2 months and see what they look like with a bit of age on them before we start shooting for a sunglow in the bread line. We might have to work something else out this year to go with her and for 12 months after.
Very cool. Now, do you do anything as far as like lineage or anything with carpets down in Australia, as far as I don't know if you're familiar with like what the Condro guys do in the US, what they do as far as, you know, even when they do designer stuff, they kind of just have like family trees that go back. Do you guys do that to keep all the crosses that you do straight, or I mean, what happens with all the, for lack of a better term, the non Sibs or whatever you want to call it, the non-mutation animals.
Yep. What used to happen and is horrible is it, a lot of those animals were euthanized, which there was just, there wasn't a real market out there for them, and the non-jag animals, like non-mutation animals, used to just be euthanized. Some of the exceptional ones were held back for future breeders. It's not until recently, over the past couple of years, some people used to go past couple of years where some of these mixed carpets started to get an age about them, and you can see the colours and the clean, the cleanliness of them, the crispness of them, where these animals are, they will be good for breeding stock. Some laws have passed here in Australia now where you can actually sell.
I think we just lost.
Oh no.
Yeah, he was a bit choppy there for a minute. I don't know if you were here or not, Owen, but
I
think
was.
He just dropped off. I don't know if you're there, Troy, but I guess call back in if I don't know.
You
it
can.
Seems like the signal goes is. Oh wait, there he is.
Okay.
No, that's not him.
No. All right.
In, out,
regroup. All right. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm
good.
Doing quite well.
Good check.
Good to hear.
Now we've got to kill some time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're doing some, I don't know, man. This is a lot of annery carpets and all. How about that? That's pretty
anneries and
pretty
paradoxes
cool.
And, he was talking about albino. I don't know if he caught it, but he's like, oh, we have the albino Darwins, then we got some albinos others. And I'm like, albino what? Albino what? This is albino Darwin. The hell are you talking about? So,
well, there was the coastal.
I know, the albino coastal. So what is that?
Yeah, I was going to bring it up. Let me see if I got it. Hey, Troy, sorry. I dropped off.
Hey, sorry, I'm not sure what happened.
That's all right. These things happen. Next time you talk to Damien, ask him about the episode he did with us.
I will do.
Yeah, because he'll tell you stories. Yeah.
I do enjoy hanging out with Damien. He's a fun guy to hang out with.
Definitely.
So, whereabouts did you guys head to?
I don't know.
I think it was just at the very beginning of what you were saying.
I'm not sure. I started rambling.
That happens. It's okay.
But no, I think what I was saying was a lot of the mixed carpets or a lot of the sibs that are being produced over this way, they're actually starting to hold a fair bit of genetic value themselves. A lot of them are either het for albino or the caramel or hypo. And now in Australia, some laws have just been passed where you can now legally sell reptiles through the shops in New South Wales. So that's opened up a bit more of the market. So a lot of the mixed breed carpets are actually heading to the shops to be sold off to, to first time reptile owners, which to me is a good thing. They're a good, strong, healthy animal where there's nothing wrong with them. They're cheap and affordable, and if they get someone new into the hobby, then they're awesome.
Right.
Okay. Is there?
So, how's your breeding regimen down there? Your breeding regimen. How do you go through breeding your guys down in Australia? You just kind of open up the windows and let nature take its course, or do you have a whole breeding regimen?
No, we pretty well do things the exact same way as you guys, but in reverse, I think. In January and February, this time of year now, is when we really start prepping our females. We really start shoveling the food items into them to make sure they've got plenty of weight on them. And then we start cooling the animals in April, and we slowly bring the food items back down, and we slowly bring the temperatures back down over 2 months. And then 1st of June, that's when we start throwing all the males around with all the different females. That's when we start pairing the animals up. And I'm not sure about the rest of the people, but that's when I go fishing. I do all my work, like getting all the females up the size, and then in breeding season, I throw the males around with the different females. I clean the water bowls, and I go fishing. I let nature take its course then. Inside, you know, the room's all temperature controlled, all the cages are temperature controlled. The lighting in the rooms, the fluoros are actually hooked in with the sensors for outside, so when the sun comes up, you know, like the fluoros in the room kick on. So yeah, she's all set up nice and artificially, I suppose, so we've got full control over it.
Nice.
Cool.
So do you do work with light cycles?
Yeah, do a lot of work with light cycles. We've actually got a whole heap of information from one of the, I'm not sure what you guys call them over there, but one of the speedways or raceways, you know, where the cars go to have drag races.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
We got a whole heap of information from one of those guys, so we can put all that into the computer, and we're starting to play around with a few different ideas of building another room, just really start playing around with the light cycles and the heat cycles and start shooting for double clutching. We've got a control room between myself and my brother where we've done a few test runs on a few single animals to breed them out of season. And we've done it with, you know, like we've done it with carpet pythons being able to successfully get eggs in February, then again successfully get eggs in September, October. We've done it with green tree pythons where we've successfully been able to get, you know, two lots of eggs one season, then one lot of eggs the next. And this year we've actually successfully done it with black-headed pythons where, you know, we've been able to get the three clutches out of one female within 2 years. So the next step for us is making sure that all that info that we got from the raceway is all up to date, expand on the room, on the test room, and start moving. You know, see if we can't bigger scale now. See if we can't move 20 or 30, 40 females in there, and you know, see if we can do it over a decent number of animals, and not just one or two over a couple of years.
Wow.
So you're double clutching pythons. That blows my mind. I don't know what to say to that.
That's a little kooky, yeah.
We're still in the test runs of it. Like, something we've been playing with past six years, and we're at the stage now where we believe, right, we're just about ready to, you know, let's expand on the room, let's set it up, and, you know, let's throw a good number of females in there and see if we can do it, you know, consistently over the next, you know, 4 years or so, 4 or 5 years. Let's try and get some, you know, some real data and, you know, see if we can't speed things up a bit more.
I had a question come in about timer, your sensors for the lights and all. Is it automatic or is it on timers?
No, it's, you'd have to, I told the Sparky, the electrician that installed it, if he can hook it up with the sensor lights that come on with, like, the street lights. So
okay.
When the sun goes down and your street lights come on, that's when I want my fluoros to shut off. That'd be a question for an electrician. I'm not with all that stuff.
I gotcha. We're just about
simple,
the snakes, right? I gotcha.
Yeah, I love being a simple snake breeder.
No worries. That's, man, I still can't get over the whole thing of Awesome.
Crazy.
So what size of the female? I mean, what kind of what size of the females that you're doing this with? Like, what do you are you cycle feeding them, or how are you doing it?
Yeah, we when we feed more, when we feed heavy, we feed heavy. So when the females first drop the eggs, we'll leave them go for 2 weeks, and then we'll start putting, you know, we'll give them 3 or 4 weeks worth of smaller food items. And now the average female, just say a carpet python, would just take an average girl, 1.8, 2.2 kilo female, something like that, throw her in the room, and just pretty well half the day. And so all the data from, in summer, the day's up for, you know, for X amount of hours. In winter, it's only up for X amount. So we've just gone through, we've taken all the data from the raceway, halved it all, thrown the animals in, and when, you know, so when we're up in the temperatures and we're up in the food items, we'll feed that girl 300 to 400 gram rats a week, get the condition right back on her, run her over the scales, make sure she's weighing in, at the right weight where we want her. Then we'll start dropping the temps. We'll drop them quickly. As we drop the temps quickly, we drop the items quickly. We introduce the male, and then we just turn around and reset the room and go again. And it's like three, and so far, the best we've been able to do is take it over 3 clutches over the 2-year cycle.
Wow. That's awesome.
If we can crack it, it's going to make for some exciting times. So it should speed a lot of projects up. So that should be, and that's I think that was the whole reason behind the trials that we started, was to just to try and speed up a lot of the breeding projects that we have in the works. Another thing we love doing is we love pushing the females to see what age we can breed them, what weight we can breed them. Like with the olive pythons, for example, when I first got into olive pythons, a lot of the research I was reading was saying that you really shouldn't try your olive pythons before 5 years of age. Your females won't be ready before 5 years of age. These days, all my girls go on the system at 2.5 years of age.
You've got to be kidding me.
Sorry?
Because I have olive pythons, and I've been told that we're going to wait till they're 7. So I'm listening intently. You just said 2. So go on.
Hell no. That is so many years wasted.
This is terrible. I hate it. Now tell me that I can do it sooner.
With the olives, to have the females sitting in between 4 and 4.5 kilos by the time they're 2.5 years of age, and they're ready to rock and roll. The smallest, the smallest clutch of olives I've produced would have been a clutch of 12, I think it was, and that would have been from a 4.2 kilo female. And one thing I've found with the olive pythons is a lot of people have a lot of problems breeding them, and a lot of the photos that I see, their girls are just too fat. They've let the girls go too long. They've got too much fat on them, and those animals will just never breed. I see photos of animals that are 13 kilos, 15 kilos. And people, send me messages, oh, how many eggs do you think I'll get? 30, 40. And I say to them, look, I don't know how to tell you this, but I'm thinking 0. Whip some weight off that girl. She's too big. Strip the weight off her and then get a heap of, I'm not sure what it's called. I like to call it new fat. And that's a whole heap of weight put on them just before breeding season. And I've found more new fat you can get on the girls just before the breeding season, the better your chances of a fertile clutch and a nice big fertile clutch at that. My biggest, heaviest breeding female, who would be 10, 11 years of age roughly, she'd weigh in at about 8 kilos, 8.3 tops. I think a lot of the people that let the olive pythons go out to 5 and 7 and like to have them up at around the 10 kilo mark, it's too big. And you can get them up to that 4.5 kilo size in 2.5 years quite easily. And the girls just take so well at that age. They just take so well to being able to pass the clutch.
Okay, so what was the ideal weight for in kilos again?
4 to 4.5 kilos at 2.5 pounds.
So about 8 to 11 pounds for people who don't know how to do the ratio between kilos to pounds. So okay.
Yeah. So that's
interesting.
To me, that's ideal for a 2.5-year-old female that's going in for her first season. And like I said, my heaviest girl, she'd weigh in at just over 8 kilos.
Okay.
Wow.
So 8 kilos for the heaviest girl.
And they are quite, you can breed them to like every year. Not every year, but a lot of the books say, breed them 1 year, spell them for a year, breed them for a year, spell them for a year. More girls, they seem to be able to go for 2 to 3 years and then they'll have a year off, and then 2 to 3 years and then they'll have a year off. So you can actually work them a lot harder and a lot faster than a lot of the books that are out there actually say you can. But a lot of those books, the ones that I researched, they were old books as well.
Right.
Cool.
That's the,
so
wow.
Olives maybe sooner. All right. I can live with that.
You find that they, you said, what's the word that you said? Some kind of fat that you're putting on the female right before the breeding season. Are you doing the same thing with your carpets as well that you're doing with the olives?
Yeah, I do it with everything. My feeding regime, it starts off in late November. So in the big breeding room, late November, I go through and I start feeding in the breeding room again, and I start throwing around small food items like 80 gram rats, 100 gram rats to the carpets, to the olives, to the blackheads, to everything that's just finished laying eggs. I go through and I give them that size food item for about 2 to 3 weeks, and then I up them to about 160, 180 gram rat, and then late January, February, I just start mapping hard. They go 180, 200 gram rats, three or four food items a week for a couple of months, and then in April I start backing it back to those smaller food items of 80 grams, 100 grams. But in that time when I was feeding them 180 gram rats, I found the smaller the food item and the more small food items you put into them, they seem to put on a lot more weight a lot quicker. So, I'm not sure what the scientific term is, so I just call it, new fat.
Gotcha.
And, so we do it with absolutely everything, blackheads, olives. When we're doing Antaresia, we used to do it with the Antaresia. And we just found that the females just took so well. Our percentage rate, our success rate, just seemed to keep going up and up when we took in that feeding regime.
Right. That's interesting. I like that kind of that. I don't know, talking to you, it's like, sometimes when you're you are stuck in your ways, kind of. I guess that's the way. Like, you know, the way we think about things, we think that's the only way to do it. And then you start talking to other people that aren't used to what we're doing, and then it's like, I don't know, it makes you completely rethink. You know what I mean? Which is good.
Yeah.
You know, that's how you learn. You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, well, I keep going like that until 1st of June, and then 1st of June, I've stopped feeding altogether. So I'll cut out those 80-gram, those 100-gram racks, and I stopped feeding altogether. And like I said, I go fishing. and I don't start feeding again until the females have finished laying eggs. I don't like going in the room and disturbing them during breeding season. So when I'm rotating males from one cage to another, I go down late afternoon. I'm in there for half hour to an hour, and then I'm back out. And then I go in again on a Friday and like take all the water bowls out, scrub all the water bowls, put fresh water back in, and walk away again. So other than that, I walk through the room of a morning to check the temps. I walk through the room of the night time to check the temps and do observations, and that's about it. I don't like to do too much work during winter. It's it's too cold. I like to stay in bed. I like to watch birds, go fishing of a night time.
I like your thinking.
No, thank you.
Yeah, I just got a question in about your basking temps. Are you what are you doing as far as that? What's your temperature for your basking spot? I guess that's during your normal time.
Yeah, I like to I like to run the carpets. I like to give them a hot spot of about 34, and cool ends. I like to make the cool end about 29. With the olives and the blackheads, we like to keep them up around 36 to 38 in the hot end, with the cool end getting down to 29 to 30 degrees. And with the carpets, we run the carpets in four foot enclosures by, I think, 400 mil high. And with the blackheads and the olives, we like to run them in 6 foot enclosures, so 1800 mils by 400 high.
Right.
So yeah, and during breeding season, we actually cut the temp of a night time altogether. But during the day, again, we like to give them access to plenty of heat. So during breeding season, we crank it up during the day for them, so they've got access to the mid to high 30s. Mid 30s for the carpets, high 30s for the olives and blackheads, and then of a night time, we like to shut it right down so it gets down to about 14 degrees in the hot end. We give them absolutely nothing of a night time. That's when we actually do open the windows and let the cold air in.
Right. Huh. And what's the lowest that it gets to when you're doing that?
Sorry?
What's the lowest temperature that you're seeing overnight, like when you drop those temps? What's the lowest you let it go?
We won't let it go below 13. 13's a bit in the hot end. 13's about the lowest that will let it go for more than a couple of hours. If we're in for a very cold winter, we've got some extrusion fans set up in the breeding room that are actually put in back to front, so we can control the amount of cool air that is actually brought into the room. So if it's a very cold winter and we don't want to leave some of the windows open for the room to get down to temp all night, we'll actually kick these extrusion fans in and manually, you know, drag in some of the cool air for a couple of hours and then turn them off.
Right.
So about 13 is about the lowest that we'll let it
right.
get to.
Is about 55 degrees Fahrenheit. Yeah.
Yeah. 14 to 16 is about average.
Huh.
Wow.
Interesting. I guess as long as they're getting that hot spot during the daytime, you know, I mean, to me,
okay.
That's kind of the
yeah.
key. That's kind of how I always felt it. They can withstand some pretty extreme, but as long as they're allowed to heat up during the day, I mean, that's kind of what they do in nature, you know, so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was one season I actually put a huge spot beam in one of the olive enclosures during the during this breeding season, and it was one of these bottom enclosures, and I was having problems with it, and I really just couldn't get the temp up there during the daytime. So I put in this huge overkill spot beam where directly under it ran up to 43 degrees. And I thought I'll leave it in there for a couple of days just to observe the olives to see what they'd do. And the female absolutely loved it. I grabbed the temp gun out and took some readings of where she used to lay and bask. And the temperature where she used to bask used to run 39 to 40 degrees. And she loved it. And she a nice fertile clutch that year. And that's when we decided, right, let's make sure that the olives and the blackheads actually get access to, 38 degrees if they want it during the breeding season. So,
wow.
Yeah, so they, during the breeding season, the olives and the blackheads have got access to a pretty extreme sort of a heat if they want it, and most of them take full advantage of it and suck it up.
Yeah, that's a over 100 degree basking spot in Fahrenheit, which wow. And you see them using it, and that's the kind of the interesting thing. That's pretty cool.
The crazy part, yeah.
Yeah, I love it. They eat it up. And being a 6-foot enclosure, we actually have a heat divider a third of the way in, so the cool spot does get nice and cool for them. It does knock a fair bit of temp off having that heat divider in there. So they eat it up. During the day, they love to eat up that heat.
Right. Yeah, I saw your cages on the videos that you started doing, and I'm assuming that's what they're the cages, right? That was your snake room, but really, really cool. I like what you got going on, so cool stuff.
What did you think of the new hobby, the new YouTubing?
I love it, man. One of the things that I said this a long time ago, kind of when we started this radio show, was I didn't see a whole lot. Like, you'll go everywhere and you'll see ball python videos and whatnot, but nothing with carpets. And when I was learning, I was wanting to see, like, how people are keeping in their room and what they're doing and what does this look like. And, I think it's awesome that you're doing that for new breeders. And then for us here in the States to see what you have going on over in Australia, it's kind of like we get to peek in the window, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love it.
So. Yeah, no, we're loving it. Myself and my brother, we're looking for, like, we started off breeding snakes as a hobby, and the hobby kind of took over our lives, and it become like full time for us, which is, it's cool, don't get me wrong, but it was like, well, damn, now we need another hobby. So we decided to, let's have a go at YouTubing. It'll be like a hobby within the hobby. That's what we started doing. We've had an absolute blast making the first one. It was fun as hell. I think we made 3 or 4 before we put one up. And it was fun. And that's what we decided. We're like, right, let's just do it. Let's do just raw stuff right at the very start. So we just used the camera that we had in the cupboard. We didn't worry about any lighting, any microphones or anything like that. And we thought, let's just start. And, as we get new toys, the shows will get better.
Right.
This is a new hobby for us. We are going to start off deep. And as we make, as the snake season goes on and we make a few extra dollars, we'll go out, we'll buy a few extra toys for the YouTubing, and it'll just get better and better. So, like, the snakes grew and got better. I mean, like, our filming I hope it gets better.
One of the things that, you're the perfect kind of guy for it, because when you're talking, you can feel your enthusiasm, you know. It's very similar to, like, Brian Barczyk, you know. He has the same type of thing. Like, when he's talking, he's enthusiastic about what he's talking about, and it makes such a difference, because people will watch that, and they're, you know, they get excited, you know. They're like, oh, man, I got to get me some carpet pythons, because this guy is awesome. You know? So good job on that part, man. Good job.
Appreciate it. Brian was actually a big big role model, a big inspiration. I've been lucky enough to hang out with Brian a couple of times while he's been filming. And it was 2 years ago where Brian and I actually hung out for about a week over here in Australia, just traveling around doing some filming. And it was, man, that was just so cool. And when Denver and myself were sitting around thinking, you know, well, Dan, what are we going to do for a new hobby? And then I started talking to him about, well, you know, when Brian was over, we went and we done this and we done that. And I got to tell you, it was fun. It was a real no-brainer. It was like, well, hell, let's go get a camera and have a crack at it. So Brian was a big inspiration, you know, towards this one.
Oh, yeah. He's great when it comes to that. You know, I look... especially when he goes, I know he goes down to Australia a couple times a year, and I always am looking forward to those videos when he comes back and, to peek in the window to see what's going on down there. It's like, ooh, look at that, you know. Cool stuff. So I don't know if you know this or maybe you can't answer this, but I have a couple questions real quick, you know, about carpet morphs and stuff. What about the Black Princess? Is that a legit morph, or is that
anything happen with that?
I know the animal you're speaking of. I'm not 100% sure of the mode of inheritance behind that girl. I know the boys down at Snake Ranch done well and got a clutch of eggs out of her again this year, but not 100% sure. That's one line I haven't really been following through, actually, to be honest with you.
Right.
It's a cool line, don't get me wrong, but when these panthers popped up with a visual hat, it was like, well, hell, that's kind of cool. So that's kind of following that mutation a bit more than the Black Princess. Just waiting for those things to pop up over this way.
Gotcha. Yeah. Now, what about,
now,
there was a, go ahead, Owen.
I was saying, now, what about the, there was an albino coastal, not an albino Darwin, just in no relation to the albino Darwins, it was a straight up albino coastal. Do you know anything that happened with that?
No, that one I did hear a rumor that that one had been found. And that national parks were actually letting that one stay in private hands. I'm not 100% sure where the animal went or what actually happened with that animal. I know we've been working with a few crosses ourselves, putting the albinos into the coastal line, and some of the 50% albino coastals that we have at the moment. Very interesting compared to the albino Darwins, your pure albino Darwins. We've found that they seem to have more lavender, and a lot less pattern. They're more of like, you know, you've got your high contrast ball pythons, and then you've got your fader ball pythons.
Right.
It's very much the same when you look at these 50% albino carpets compared to albino Darwins. It's like looking at a fader compared to a high contrast. Well, that's what we've found our way with the work that we've been doing.
Gotcha.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one more, I think. What's now that was proven out. The one with that was I guess it's the silver peppered inland or that was proven out.
Yeah,
what was the one that we were talking about last week with Nathan? The Ghost Darwins? Is that it?
Ghost Darwins, there were some Ghost Darwins kicking around a while ago.
Right.
And that line pretty well I think it dropped off for a while. I'm not 100% sure what actually happened with that line.
Right. No one seems to be, which is what Nathan was telling just last week. So,
Which is that a new line of ghosts that have just appeared? Some were produced. I think it was Rex and Nick's doc produced some real trippy looking Darwins 6-8 years ago that they coined as ghosts. And that line kind of just disappeared.
Right. This one was kind of like, it kind of reminded me of what we would call a tiger carpet here. Had a nice bold stripe on the back of it.
Yeah.
Not really what I would consider a ghost per se, as far as like, you know,
I didn't name it. Yeah.
Now, that was one that, I think that's the same line of ghosts. There was another mutation that I haven't really been keeping track of, of that one. The I know there's a breeder over here by the name of Rob McLeod that's got a pretty cool line of carpets that he's got going at the moment. They're a hypo coastal that seem to have the mode of inheritance as same as your Zebs and your Jaguars as the incomplete dominant mode.
Gotcha.
And so it's going to be interesting to see how he goes with those. So I think there might be a super form kicking around already with that animal, and he's shy about posting photos, or he might have posted one photo already, but that's a pretty cool line of carpet.
Right.
And then it's another cool line kicking around in the Murray Darlings, which we've actually now this it's a I've only seen four of these animals, and these are just photos that I've seen, and they're a weird looking animal. They've got they're a pure Murray Darling, and they've got like a granite type pattern throughout the bottom half of the body, and then the top half of the body and the head is very zebra pattern. So they're a real cool looking, cool looking bunch.
That's awesome.
Well, enough, we've got a female. I think we bought a female one of those, and she'll be coming in February. So really keen to start working with that line to see what the go is there.
Cool.
Darren Whitaker with his silver peppers. I was only talking with him in November. At the Scales and Tails Festival, I think he's still doing well with those ones. So that should be pretty cool when he's ready to start releasing them out to some of the other breeders. I think he's making good headway with them. So
cool.
There's plenty of cool stuff happening. More and more stuff starting to pop up, which is really cool.
Does it seem like the hobby is growing and more? I mean, as far as like here, carpet pythons are kind of a niche type of python. Is that the same down there, or are they like what corn snakes are to us here? You know what I mean?
No, I think the carpet pythons are still yet to explode over here. Yeah, I think they're still getting wound up as we speak. The hobby seems to be growing ever so quickly. The hobby's going nuts over this way, which is awesome. More and more things are happening over here to help promote the hobby, which is cool. There's more expos happening here in Australia now. There's more festivals. We've still got the magazine that's going strong over here in Australia. We've got a reptile radio show over here in Australia now, which is cool. It's a lot of things are going on to promote the hobby, and carpet pythons really seem to be up the front, leading the way with animals being produced and being sold, and newcomers' first animal, first reptile purchased is a carpet python. It's we're still yet to explode over here.
Okay. Do you find that they're like the goat, well, you're saying that they're like the starter python type of thing. I guess that's because they're, I guess the other pythons could be a little bit trickier. They're kind of, carpets seem to me to be rock solid, man. I mean, these other type of pythons, it seems to get tricky, you know, like I know blackheads with feet and the babies, and let's see, olive pythons are tricky to breed. Carpets seem to be pretty much straight ahead, man, you know? I don't know. Is that kind of what people see?
Bomb-proof, yeah, bomb-proof animals. So it's I think the only problem is loving your new pet snake to death. or Antaresia. Antaresia do well. And some of the work that some of the boys are doing over this way, the Antaresia pythons is like nuts as well. So it's a toss up between carpets and Antaresia, but I think carpets are out in front a little bit, leading the way when it comes to, you know, first animals for a first time keeper.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Yeah,
some of the
other
stuff you got hanging around there.
Yeah.
No scrubs. Scrubs aren't good beginners.
So carpets are only a niche part of the market, are they?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, you know, ball pythons are kind of like the main thing over here if you're a python person. And, you know, I mean, it seems that carpet pythons have grown in popularity, obviously, you know, but I don't know. I kind of like them being in that kind of category because you're just like right below the radar to where you're kind of cool, but there's not too many idiots working with them that screw things up.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I agree.
They stay right at that, you know, they're cool, but just cool enough, you know, so... I don't know.
And we'll be producing plenty more over this way. So, and I can't believe that they're just a niche thing over there. I thought they were huge in America, with all the photos I'd seen and all the research. Everything has always been in America or Europe. I always thought that the animals were huge over your way.
Well, no, just the people who own them are that passionate about it that we yell the loudest. Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Us Morelia
people.
We
are both small, but we are
really
the loudest.
Yeah, we're a finicky bunch, you know?
Yes.
What happens with the mixed carpets, the siblings to the jaguars and the zebras over that way? Are they still... Are they sold off over there as carpets? Are they euthanized?
That depends on the breeder. Some of them are sold off, but the problem is that a lot of them look like normals after a certain point or can be confused. So the big thing now is that it's the breeder's decision whether to sell them or cull them. You have to accurately represent your animals. And if you're a new customer on the carpet market, and you buy from anybody else other than a breeder, the the genetics or what type of carpet python you have is always going to be in question. It can never be 100% sure. So you can buy a really, really nice jungle from a dealer or somebody or from a pet store, but it's you cannot run around and call it a pure jungle because it's the question, because you don't know. You have to have the lineage and the proof to be able to say that.
Yeah, I mean, when you have guys that like myself, I dabble in both worlds. I have high-end carpet morph projects, and then I have, you know, locality or subspecies type of projects as well. When it comes to my morph stuff, I use sometimes those offspring can be used to refine the morph. You know what I mean? So, if you have a caramel coastal and you're trying, that's a bad example. If you have a caramel zebra and you're trying to improve it, if you get something that comes across that you know, is a brighter color or more yellow or reduced black or something like that. I mean, because it's already a cross, it doesn't really, you know, make a difference, so to speak, you know.
Yeah.
So,
but
I don't know.
If you buy
some people
a,
are. Go ahead.
But I mean, like, if you buy something from somebody with no background, just on a whim, you can't then cross it with a zebra and call the offspring 100% jungle. You can't just walk around and say it's pure stock all around, because it might not be. And that's
not fair.
So
yeah,
it's not
there's
fair.
Always
people
lines.
Who try really hard to make sure. So
yeah, there's like lines that get drawn in the sand for people. It's like, I'll cross this, but I won't cross that, or I won't cross at all, or, you know, it's if you do that.
Or have a blackhead to eat all my siblings, so.
Well, that too.
Yeah, there's that one. I mean, there's a lot of people go a lot of different places. All I can say is that over here, pretty much, you're on the hook for representing yourself and your animals accurately. Beyond that, you can't do anything, so.
And who even knows what we have, you know what I mean?
No one does. We have no damn clue.
And over here in Australia, we actually have a bit of a hard time at the moment between the, the purists, your hardcore purists that believe that animals shouldn't be crossed and you know, they like to know the exact locality of every animal. So you have those sort of people, and then you have your Asian people. These days I'm just straight out mutation, but I do have pure stock. Because I used to, before the mutations become available, all we had in Australia was pure locale specific animals. So the cool thing about our collection is if we needed some more pure gelatins or some more Gosford Locale diamonds, we can make them. The hard thing though, being in Australia, is I'm known as a mutation breeder. So if I was to try and turn around and sell some pure Locale Pacific Gosford diamonds, I'd have a very hard time selling them, no matter how good the reputation might be, or how clean you keep your nose, sort of thing. You're still going to have purists there thinking, oh, no, hang on, this bloke, he breeds jags. You can't sell an East.
Yes.
Locale specific, my bum.
One of the things that I've tried to do to help that is keep what the Chondro guys, what they do is they keep, lineage information. So if I put that out there, then people will see kind of what I'm doing and hopefully. But I guess it comes down to trust, they have to trust me, and if they don't, then they don't, But
that's one thing I done right from the get-go. From the very first jags that we bought in, wrote down the exact percentages of them, and again, it was, I had to take them at the person that I bought them off of. I had to take the lineage and those percentages at his word, and then all the animals from there on that we produced they've all been added. All the percentages have all been worked out. That's all been logged away, so we can punch in the code of any animal in the breeding room, and it'll tell you the exact percentage that's in that animal. It'll tell you who mum is, the exact percentage that's in mum. It'll tell you who dad is. It'll show you the photo of dad, tell you the exact percentages of dad, and you can keep tracing them back. And that's
right.
That's one thing that we did start, and that's one thing that we will keep doing the whole way through. And when we do sell animals, we pass that information on, letting the person know exactly what's in that animal that they are buying. I love doing that. And the main reason I do it, well, there's two reasons. One, the person that's buying the animal, they have a right to know exactly what's in the animal that they're buying. Two, if we crack out an outstanding animal in a couple of years' time, I want to be able to go, through its background, find out, you know, exactly what's in that animal so I can have another crack at reproducing it.
Sure.
So, and instead of just, you know, well, I definitely do the F1 back crosses and the same. Sorry about that. What's in that animal, so, you know, just in case that animal died for some reason, I'd know exactly what's in it so I can have another crack at making another one.
Right. Hey, you brought up locality diamond python.
Still there?
Yeah. Can you hear us? Hello? You there?
Oh, there you go. Sorry.
Owen?
Yep.
Yeah. I got
okay,
you.
There we go.
Okay.
All right. We're all back.
All right. Locality diamonds.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I heard you mention locality diamonds, and I'm curious, do you keep them any different than your other carpets?
No.
Same way.
Yep, keep all my carpets the exact same way.
Gotcha. Okay. Because do you see anything with, like, diamond python syndrome down there, what we call that here in the States? Do you see that down there in Australia? Or?
I don't have a big collection of diamonds. I've got a few diamonds, and I don't really see any diamond python syndrome in those animals. What I do see, and I'm not sure if other breeders actually see it, and that's the high percentage diamond jags that I get out. The older they seem to get, the more neurological disorders they seem to, you know, seem to develop. And I tie the neurological disorder into the DPS, the diamond python syndrome. I just think that the two are too much of an overload. So myself, I don't do real high percentage diamond jags anymore. I still do a lot of low percentage diamond jags, which show absolutely no neurological disorder. But what I've found myself with my own breedings is the higher percentage diamond jags, they're just, once they hit 1 to 2 years of age, a lot of, even though they look good for the first, you know, year or 2 years, once they start getting a bit of age on them, that's when they start becoming a bit loopy. So I'm not sure if those two tie in together or not, but that's, you know, I'm not sure if other breeders over there have ever found that. Do you guys have any thoughts on that one?
Well, actually, I was going to ask you, Troy, if you could dispel a rumor for us. Do the jaguars in Australia carry neurological?
It comes with the mutation.
Thank God someone actually said it from Australia. So everyone who is listening, if any jackass tells you that his is pure from Australia where there's no neurological, what is that? Say it all with me. A lie. Thank you, God.
It's with the mutation, but over here in Australia, the rumors are rampant that every single jaguar has neurological disorder.
Thank you.
The latest rumor is that the older they get, every single python develops it when they hit 7 or 8 years of age. A lot of the animals I've got don't have it. We produce several hundred jags a year, and out of that, there might be one or two every year that get euthanized because they've got neurological disorder. And we don't sell jags to kids for the simple fact I believe stress is a big factor in the neurological disorder. And, you get a 13-year-old that's going to get, you know, if his first snake's going to be a jag, he's going to take it home, he's going to play with it, and he's going to love that thing to death. He's going to stress it out big time. So we don't sell them to kids. We don't sell them to first-timers. But they seem fine for people once they've had, you know, one or two snakes. They know what they're doing. They know they can appreciate the animal. They can read the animal a bit better. When they're holding the animal, if the animal is starting to stress out, when to put it away, all that sort of stuff. neurological disorder in Australia. You really don't see too much of it, but it does come with the mutation. So to say that Australia is neuro-free, yeah, it's a lie.
There you go. Dispelled myths here at Morelia Python Radio for you. There you go.
Yep.
Cool stuff. Well, we're
once more doing a great service.
we're about to hit the end of the show, and we just wanted to make sure we get your website, your information out there. When is the next? So let's start with this. When is the next episode of your video, your YouTube, going to come out? Can we look forward to that sometime soon?
Oh yeah, it's K Brothers Pythons. So just yank that, okay, Brothers Pythons. That's what myself and my brother. That's what we've called ourselves.
Okay.
Excuse me. We're about to upload another one today. So check in tonight. Check in tomorrow for that one. And that one, man, that one's going to be cool. We've actually it's a line that Denver's been working on for the past 10 years in the black-headed pythons with ocelot. So ocelot black-headed pythons. And in 2013, he actually paired an ocelot black-headed python with an ocelot black-headed python. And, man, wait till you see this clutch. It's breathtaking. So that one's all going up. We'll upload that one today. So, like I said, check in tonight, check in tomorrow for that one. Or the last episode, we're going up once every fortnight. We're going to throw a new one up every 2 weeks.
Okay.
The last one's worth the last one's worth a look as well. It was all it was egg cutting. We cut four clutches in one day, and there were some pretty cool gelatin jags in there. Some actually very cool gelatin jags in there. Those things are about a shed now, and they are just outstanding. There was a Sunglow clutch in there. There was albino olive, two albino olive clutch in there that we cut. And there was also our Sunglow clutch, which was a first for us. We've never produced a Sunglow before, so that was a first for us as well. So that was pretty cool. So,
awesome.
Yeah, that's worth a watch. But, yeah, the new one, most definitely. It's pretty cool.
Awesome. And do you have a website that we can check out or to see what you have going on?
At the moment, we don't. We've actually, this is 2014, is pretty exciting for myself and my brother. We've both been snake breeders, but we've been our own, you know, separate snake breeders for the past 15 years, 17 years, however long we've been playing around with the game for. But there's 14 is we've actually merged the collections together now. So we've actually got to go through and build our own, you know, build a new website for ourselves. So Den's old website is Den Pythons. Mine was Codom Carpet. They're still up and running, but, you know, we've got to shut them down. But you can find us on Facebook. You can find me as Troy Killer, my brother, Sam Kilogoski, on Facebook. Jump on and add us as a friend and start chatting. We love getting on there chatting to, you know, to like-minded reptile enthusiasts.
Cool. All right. Yeah. I'll throw that up on our Morelia Python Facebook page. And be sure to post up your videos as well so people can check them out and you know, spread the reptile love, you know what I mean? So.
I'll have to, if it's time to get going, I'll have to catch up with you boys when I'm over this year. So hopefully coming over to do a trip around the States. So I'd like to catch up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely.
That'd be awesome.
Definitely.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. And you're welcome. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, sounds like a plan. Hoping to do a big trip this year to get over to the States and check out a few of the different expos that you guys have got going on over there, hoping to catch up with with a few people. So, you know, it'd be good to actually get over there and put some faces to some names and stuff like that. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah,
shoot for May, because that's when we have Carpet Fest, and you'll meet everybody all at once. So.
There you go.
Cool.
Or... or Tinley Park. You can that's probably a big one that you go to.
That's a good one.
Tinley Park in October, we have Carpet Row, and you'll see a lot of cool stuff over there. So, cool.
Seems like that one actually seems like a plane. Tinley Park.
Yeah.
That's the real deal right
one.
There.
There you go. So,
yeah,
Brothers is coming to America to do Tinley Park.
Awesome.
Nice. There you go. Yeah, man, anytime you want to come back on the show, we'll talk. I always love talking, like I said, carpet pythons is my thing, and I know Owen loves talking carpet pythons too. And I got a lot of good feedback as the show was going on that people learned a lot and really enjoyed the show. So, you know, anytime you want to come on and talk about your videos or whatever, feel free. You know, the line's always open for you.
Oh, I appreciate it so much, guys. Hey, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So you have a good, well, it's night for us, but I guess it's day for you, right?
Morning for you, I guess. I don't know.
It's just gone 2 o'clock in the afternoon over here. So I actually in about an hour's time. That's why I was running late this morning. I'd be mixed up.
Oh, there you go. All right. Well, you have a good day then, and we'll have a good night. Then we'll talk soon. Okay.
All right. Sweet dreams, guys.
All right. Thank you.
Appreciate it. All right.
Thanks,
guys. Yep. Ah, what a cool show, man. Despite the couple technical
choppy
we had.
Yeah.
But it seems like later on in the show, whatever Troy worked out seemed to work well, so we got a good connection later on.
He stopped moving, so it worked. Yeah.
Maybe it was me that was moving around too much. I don't know.
I knew it. Yeah, you had to screw it up.
Leave it to me. But cool stuff. I don't have the guest locked in specifically for next week, they're Australian. Like I said, we're going to get that fun.
We're going to do three?
Yeah.
Jesus.
I told you, a month of Australian talk. So,
apparently.
So there you go. Yeah. what else do we got going on? I just give the rundown and then we'll jump off. I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to hit on, Owen, but, anything?
No, I'm good. Let's do the rundown.
All right, let's knock it out of here. Okay, mp.com, morelipythons.com. Go over, check out the forum. Hopefully, they can get the chat up there.
Yeah,
going.
Yeah.
I know that Chris Behoff was talking about getting a chat going, which is a great idea. So be on the lookout for that. I don't know if he's going to do it on Facebook or however he's going to do it.
Something or other.
Yeah, we're breeding.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping we could get back to that.
Newbies, you can launch a chat over on our site. It's clicked into. We'll have to try it next episode.
We have to have an experiment.
Yeah, and I'll have to log you into this page as a co-host, though, and then
right,
I don't know.
Right. If
you
have to can't even get into my email.
Yeah, so there
I've given up trying. It's over.
So, yeah, go over, check out the forum, MorelliaPythons.com. For all things Morelia-related, your one-stop shop for everything would be MorelliaPythonRadio.com. Check it out. If you have any questions or comments, want to get in touch with us, info@MorelliaPythonRadio.com is our email. If you're just getting into carpets, if you're new and you found us, welcome. And then
good job.
Be sure to check Be sure to check out the Carpet Python Classified Facebook page. That's pretty much where you'll find, pretty much reputable breeders. I don't think that Chris lets anybody that's no good on there. And
we do. And there is that link to the what the hell is it called?
Breeder list. The breeder
list.
Yeah.
Let's go with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Check that out on the Facebook, and there's some cool stuff that shows up on there. And you can get some really good carpet pythons on there. Let's see, what else do I got? Carpet Fest, don't forget. Northeast is May 17th, and the Northwest is July 26th. So be sure that pick your poison. Maybe you want both. Maybe you want one. Maybe you want the other. I am personally biased to the Northeast one, but hey, that's just
we have to be. We have to be. Done. The original,
so,
if you want to call it that.
Yeah, I guess we could go that road, right?
We could.
So, yeah, be sure to keep on the lookout for that. And other than that, just check out ebmorelia.com. I'm working on I'm finishing up the site. The only thing that I have left to add to that, which is not live yet, but I have a care section, and then I have a breeding section where I give my thoughts on both to kind of give you some direction and dispel myths, et cetera, et cetera. So,
because this isn't enough for Eric. He has to have a separate place to do exactly what we do here. But go on.
Yeah,
continue.
Yeah, exactly. give a shout. Thanks, Owen. When he talks about
Road Crunch
Time.
I'm sorry. I know you're...
Say it, Rogue Reptiles. I'm going to say, oh, doesn't he update the site? Or
I don't update the shit out of Rogue, okay? They know, I know, everybody knows.
Right.
All right.
That's all I got, Owen.
On that note, all right, what I have is that you can go to rogue-reptiles.com, which is never updated, like we just said. You can find – shut up! For pictures, damn it. You can go to rogue-reptiles at facebook.com. Rogue will be – I think we're attending the Poughkeepsie show on February 16th. I'm waiting to see confirmation as if we will be vending that show. But I think we're definitely going to go. Other than that, I think the only thing we got coming up is the Hamburg show, which is also in February. I'm not sure on the dates on that. I'll get you guys next week.
Okay.
That's all I got. That's all Eric has. And before we embarrass ourselves any further, what I will say is thanks for listening, and we'll catch everybody next week for some more Morelia Python Radio. Good night.